Renee here at Unsupervised Learning, your easy listening podcast for bleeding edge open source tech. This episode sees me speaking to Emily Witko, someone who is transforming the people operations at Hugging Face, has experience at General Assembly and also Alternate Futures and sits on their board of directors. It was an excellent conversation on psychological safety in engineering teams and remote work. Hope you enjoy. Hello, I do the introductions afterwards so that you don't have to sit here and hear how wonderful you are, but you are the what do you have, like a title, like it's like people operations or
it's a great wanna... question. The short mm-hmm. answer is not really. It's a very I describe my role as being just a very startup-y sort of generalist people role where, I focus on a couple of my favorite things and then also whatever needs to get done. And so I have a very, very people generalist role.
Yeah. And has it changed a lot? Like, I imagine it has, but I wanted to talk about like your, because previously, were you at very technical, like, do you have a very technical background or any exposure to much software or like,
yeah,
it's not really a question. It's more of a run-on sentence, but.
No, I really do not, actually. I'm trying to think of how to tell this story in a short-ish way, but most of my career has actually been spent in like customer facing roles. So account management, like enterprise account work, and has not fully been focused on software. So a chunk of my career was at General Assembly, which is sort of a tech education startup that I feel most people have heard of. And then I'd say my most technical job previous to Hugging Face was at a little teeny tiny six-person banking startup that I was working at for a couple of years, where we actually were building software. And because it was such a tiny team, I was not writing the code, but I was involved in that software in essentially every other way that you could possibly think of, in addition to working with our client or working with our customers. So that was sort of my first really foray into understanding the complexities of software. But at the end of the day, we were still building essentially just an app, right? We're all fairly familiar with apps at this point, and particularly banking apps. They're not the world's most cutting edge piece of technology all the time. And so when I moved to Hugging Face, it was definitely a period of transition that sometimes I still feel like I'm in, where all of a sudden these technical conversations were very different than the technical conversations I've had in the past, and much more complicated.
I want to get into like, how did that move happen? Like, how did you end up at Hugging Face?
Yeah. So when I was working at this banking startup, we actually were starting to think about what an automated chatbot could look like. And so I had done some searching around about some of the easiest ways for us to build our own, or possibly even some of the ways that I could build a chatbot without using some of our very limited engineering resources at that startup. And that's actually how I found Hugging Face. And I started digging through the website a little bit, and pretty early on in trying to explore Hugging Face, realized that it's a very technical place, right? Even for folks that end up at the Hugging Face website, it may even be difficult to know what Hugging Face is once you've landed on our homepage, if you're not an engineer. And so I just was doing a bunch of research, I think, digging around on like Reddit or GitHub or looking through the documentation just to try to learn a little bit more about what Hugging Face was. And as I learned a little bit more about like the open source leanings and the fact that there is an ethics team here and the fact that they're thinking about AI in a really responsible way, I started to get more and more interested in the organization. So I applied to an open head of customer success role that was at on the job site at the time, and very quickly heard from the CEO, Clément, who asked if we could chat. And so we had a couple of conversations that were really quite informative about the culture at Hugging Face, and we talked about my experience. And then after our second-ish conversation, he said, I think we really need someone with technical skills in this customer success role. We'll probably be looking to hire an engineer. But what I hear is that you really love to build teams. You really like to think about employee engagement. You like to recruit and hire and source and all of those things. Would you be interested in joining the team and doing those things? And my reaction was, I was super excited. It had been a switch that I had been considering making for a few years, but wasn't really sure how to shift from the customer service space into the people space. And more or less on the call said, I'm excited by this prospect, but I just need you to know that this is not work that I've ever done before in a professional capacity. And his reaction was what sealed the deal for me, and why I really wanted to work at Hugging Face was, and it was essentially like, I don't care. We're not particularly interested in what people have done before. We're much more interested in what people can accomplish once they've joined us. And it was really just that, I don't know, that ethos that really got me excited to work for Hugging Face. And he did further clarify his I don't care to be a little bit less harsh.
Very French. Very like, well.
And described that, you know, we have physicists that are now working as machine learning engineers, and we have linguists and philosophers, and just the background of the folks at Hugging Face is are completely varied, which A, makes it a really interesting place to work, but B, is a culture that I always wanted to be a part of, right? I was excited by the idea that we're more excited about people's potential than we are essentially about what they've accomplished in the past or what school they went to or exactly what their resume says. So yeah, that's a long-winded way of saying that's how I ended up here.
That's a great story.
Yeah, I was really impressed with the leadership. And the last part of it I'll say, which sort of relates to the fact that I don't really have a specific job title, is my partner is a lawyer here in the States. And I remember he was really nervous when I signed my paperwork because I didn't have a job title and I didn't really even have a job description. And I can remember a conversation we had where he was like, how do you know what you'll be doing? And my reaction was just sort of like, I don't, but we'll figure it out along the way. And so it's been just over 2 years of my time at Hugging Face. And, you know, my role, I think, has shifted with sort of the company needs, but it's been a really wonderful learning experience.
That leaves me in like a couple paths to go down. But when you mentioned about it's not like a laissez-faire attitude, but it's more like kind of an openness, like you said, like being like, oh, are you generally like that, would you say, in terms of like career-wise, or are you have you found that that's been something that people need to kind of adopt to work in open source, is having a more experimental mindset, I guess.
That's super interesting. I know for me personally, I get excited by new things. And so anytime I'm given the opportunity to like try out a new role or think about even just like a new project idea, I'm definitely the type of person to say yes and dive right in. And so I think that's part of why sort of the ambiguity of the space doesn't scare me, is, you know, I'm excited by it in some ways. I guess I feel like there are possibly some similarities between working in a startup environment and engaging in open source community spaces, mostly in just the sense that you never know what's going to happen next, or you never know what sort of comment somebody will make, or you'll never know what sort of improvement you'll see in the project that you're working on. And so it does require, I would say, a significant level of flexibility. And probably along with that, a level of confidence in your own skills. Mm. And being able to sort of step into a different scenario and feel confident enough to stay involved. And so I guess, I never really thought about it before, how you might be able to extrapolate it to being involved in open source communities, but it is an interesting thought.
The kind of context for that is I found it very, despite only having worked in startups, I found it very different. I think it was almost an ego activity, stepping into open source, being like, okay, it's constant feedback, right, from the community. And it's like the awareness that you don't necessarily, even if you own a function, it's like, it's not yours. You're doing it for the betterment of whatever. So you need to be, you can't be, I don't want to say pigheaded, but I'm going to say it. You can't be pigheaded about decision making. And it's, so you posted on LinkedIn about decision making at Hugging Face, and yeah, how that, like, I guess I'm asking, like, was it just an intuitive, like a duck to water type thing with you, where you're like, yeah, this is cool, this is fine, because that's the vibe I'm picking up, where you're like, you're just the kind of person that just goes with it? Or was it a little bit of a learning curve? And if it was fine, have you seen people that do go through that journey? And what does that look like? And what do they need to kind of learn to overcome their own issues?
Yeah, no, I mean, even for me, it definitely was a learning curve. I think both being part of an open source community and experiencing the things that you described, and also working for a place like Hugging Face that operates internally very similar to, I would say, the way that open source communities work by design, right? So the word that we use at Hugging Face over and over is decentralization. I think your experience with open source is a good example of decentralization. The example that I use for folks that I feel like, especially those that are coming from more traditional startup environments, is that we don't have like a cascading goal setting process each year, right? Like our CEO is not setting goals or OKRs for the whole company, and then each team is sort of building off of that. Mm-hmm. It's completely flipped, right? So by design, the folks that are doing the work, the folks that are involved in our communities, are setting their own goals. And not only that, they're coming up with their own projects a lot of the time. And so it's interesting, because you can imagine interviewing an engineer, a candidate who wants to work at Hugging Face, and saying to them, no one's going to tell you what to do, and you can choose what you want to work on. And you can imagine that some folks, that's a dream, right? Some engineers are like, sweet, like, I don't have to talk to anyone, and I can just work on what excites me. We love when that happens. For other people, including myself, it's a little bit of a learning curve, because all of a sudden, it's not only that you're sort of left to your own devices, it's just that all of a sudden you have a level of responsibility that you may not have had at your other organizations, right? There's sort of a lack of top-down direction that can sometimes leave you feeling a little bit like you're floating in the middle of the sea. And I feel like I've heard similar experiences, especially from folks who are trying to get involved in open source projects, is almost that, what's the phrase I'm trying to think of, where it's just like that paradox of choice, where you have so many different projects that you can get involved in,
yeah,
that you never start, right? Or you never pick one.
Like analysis paralysis, kind of.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And so sometimes working at Hugging Face can feel the same way, because there's 1,000 projects that you can be involved in, both internally and with our communities. And so that's definitely part of like a growing pain here at Hugging Face, I would say, and something that I had to learn was to limit all those projects that I get really excited about and really come up with a focus for myself, so that the work that I was doing, the work that I am doing, is highly impactful, and thoughtfully done.
Yeah, nice. I wanted to speak a little bit more about like the work that you're doing, but it led me to think about like psychological safety, because I think that that's maybe one of the foundations of impactful teams. I say this not having been in people ops very much at all, but you know, I'm like one of those LinkedIn people that just say all of these things and it's like, what qualifications do you have? And it's like, well, I've got an opinion. So, but I do feel that wherever you work, psychological safety is so important. But even the idea of saying that it's important, it puts you a little bit in the firing line if you're working somewhere that isn't psychologically safe, right? Because then you're looking like a snowflake. So it's kind of something that I wanted to touch on, like, because in my experience, I'm stereotyping here, but I'm of the opinion that software engineers and engineers, ML engineers, would be like, I just want to do the work, I don't need to worry. But it's like, you do have the type of people that do need that constant reassurance and checking kind of thing. So like, what does that look like at Hugging Face if there's no top-down culture? Like, what kind of things do you do in team building, that kind of thing? I understand my questions are always 4 questions in one. We're getting better at that.
It's a very thoughtful question. But in a similar vein, I feel like I have 4 answers. So to start, what I will say is I don't need to tell you this, but the like quote unquote world of open source is not always the most psychologically safe place, right? It's the internet. We all know what happens sometimes on the internet, and especially from a place of inclusiveness, we don't have exact figures, right? And I feel like the numbers that I use when I talk about this are from an old, maybe 3 or 4 year old GitHub study, but open source contributors that are women, we're looking at essentially fewer than 10%. And there are, I'm sure, you know, these are complicated conversations, and I'm sure there are a variety of reasons for that, but it's not always a psychologically safe space. And folks that face systemic biases or have barriers in their life are less likely to engage in places that are less psychologically safe. And so I think that complicates communities that exist on the internet where people feel like they can behave in some less than appropriate ways. Internally at Hugging Face, we spend a lot of time making sure that our employees do feel safe. We do it, I would say, in a few ways. One, I was going to say is sort of your a more standard or traditional approach. But I feel like using those words sort of undercut the amount of work that we've done to do it correctly. But we have a team of folks that is incredibly thoughtful and works very hard on our community standards. And those are public, and those are things that I can share with you. And they are, you know, our hub is monitored by both our team and the community. And we, you know, don't tolerate certain behaviors in our community, which is something I'm trying to share a little bit more widely with folks who may not currently exist in these communities. For example, just maybe 2 weeks ago while I was in Paris, we hosted a women in machine learning and data science event.
I was going to get to that. That was one of the things that I was trying to kind of head in the direction of. But go ahead. Sorry.
No, and all I was going to say is like talking to groups, you know, of like those, and encouraging open source contributions if folks, you know, if folks in the Women in Data Science group are not already contributing to open source projects on Hugging Face or wherever, to try to encourage folks to do that and explain that we generally, you know, we try very hard to have a psychologically safe platform. Internally at Hugging Face, our team is very, very flat, right? And that's part of the decentralization. That's part of why we don't have this sort of pyramid shaped organization. And what that means is that we tend to have fairly small teams that are very project based. And each of these teams consists of maybe between 4 to 8 people, probably not much larger than that. And there tends to be a team lead for each project. And I say this because our team leads serve an important function. A, they're probably the point person for other people at the company to ask a bunch of questions of, but B, they work as that, like, quote unquote, leadership to make sure that the rest of the team is feeling validated, is feeling safe, and also is part of, like, feedback cycles and making sure that folks are getting support and information and setting goals together when they need to. We have one of our values at Hugging Face is to have a kind ambition. And what that means is that we're like shooting for the stars in terms of Hugging Face success. You know, we want 10,000 employees and we want to be the platform for AI builders. But at the same time, we don't want to take work too seriously. We never want to put work ahead of essentially our people, our humanness. And I think that most of our team takes that truly to heart and is a very supportive and psychologically safe group that, I don't mean for this to sound like chastising or anything, but like that I'm so proud of every day. Like I am very proud of this team for both being incredibly smart people working on cutting edge technology and doing it with empathy and thoughtfulness, which I think is just a really special combination.
Mm. You've seen the team scale from like how many people were when you started?
I think it was about 40 when I started, and now we're close to 200.
Yeah, wow. That's a lot. What's the, like, I don't want to put you on the spot, but like, do you have an example of like something that you've done at Hugging Face that has been very enjoyable for you? Like, it doesn't have to be like, this was the biggest thing. It's just like, what kind of did you enjoy doing the most?
Good question. We talk a lot about impact at Hugging Face. We don't do standardized like 360 yearly reviews, mm-hmm. performance reviews at Hugging Face. We do them much more on like project cycles. We sort of leave it up to our teams to have discussions when appropriate regarding performance. But the word that you'll hear over and over, like cascading throughout the company, is the word impact. And when I started at Hugging Face and was early on in the process, there wasn't a lot of definition behind the word impact, right? So we would have new folks join the team. As a random example, someone would join our like front end web development team, and our onboarding materials got them set up technically, and they met one or two people on the team, and then we would say, okay, go have an impact, and then just sort of send them off on their on their way. And what I found was that there was a lot of anxiety is probably the best word for new folks at Hugging Face, because for the first 3 months, the first 6 months, even sometimes, of not knowing exactly what you're supposed to be doing and not knowing where the goalposts are did create some anxiety. And so I feel like one of the projects that I'm most proud of and really did enjoy doing at Hugging Face was creating like structure for impact plans for each of our teams. Now we are a startup and we're super agile, so our goals look very different than sort of traditional KPIs, right? They're not hugely specific, but each team now, when you hire somebody new, you actually have a document or a couple of paragraphs that you can share and say, here are our goals, here's some projects where you can fit in, and these are spaces in which we expect you to have an impact. And just setting those expectations right away went a long way toward making our new folks feel super comfortable and excited to work at Hugging Face, as opposed to feeling like they weren't really sure where they should be spending their time. And I think it's actually been a very powerful change in our culture, is to have some of this stuff documented and give people some confidence when they start.
Because you can have two different kind of, I see two different types of people where it's like some people without the kind of guardrails, it's like, oh, this is amazing, this is so freeing. And other people, it's like that guardrail is a gift. And for people like me, that guardrail is a gift, because otherwise I'm like, I'm running in this direction. Is it even the right direction?
That's right. Yeah.
My kind of last question before I do my typical weirdo questions, all the other questions were normal, is like, do you have any specific pointers on grabbing those? I imagine you've spoken to so many technical people and you've been able to pull out insights from them. Like you said, that there was, you had to go digging in documentation. Like, how have you found grabbing knowledge from technical teams, or knowledge sharing, I should say, building a culture of knowledge sharing? I know that documentation is important for some folks, but.
Sure.
Yeah.
I just had a conversation with one of my colleagues while I was in the Paris office, because we were speaking with an engineer who was a recent graduate, and so someone who didn't have a lot of work experience. And that person was asking me some really technical questions about the Hugging Face platform. And I more or less did the thing of being like, I can't help you, but my colleague can. And I pointed this person, I sort of pushed this person in the direction of my colleague. But then found out a little while later that my colleague also couldn't figure out what this person was asking. And so that story is just leading me down the path of saying that at Hugging Face, we think the best marker of a good engineer, particularly somebody who works on really complicated projects, is someone who can very clearly explain the work that they're doing to non-technical folks, right? To be a great engineer, you should be able to speak without jargon, right? You should be able to speak in plain language, and have your work be accessible to all different kinds of people, right? That's not always the case. But I do think it's something that our engineers at Hugging Face are exceptional at. I feel like one of the ways that we knowledge share really well at Hugging Face, and it's kind of part of our culture that I think sometimes surprises people, is that we don't have any meetings. One of our very, very few policies at Hugging Face is that we really encourage asynchronous communication over meetings every time, for a couple of reasons. One is that, as you know, with being in Australia and me being in California, the number of times that we're available to meet is fairly limited, and we don't want people waking up in the middle of the night to take a meeting. But almost more importantly is that when we don't have meetings, it means that all conversations are written down. Mm. And so what that means is that I can go back in our Slack, in Google Drive at any given time and say, you know what? I don't understand this feature on the hub. For example, I don't know what Hugging Face assistants do. What is this? And I can literally just in Slack type the word Hugging Chat assistant and go find conversations that have happened in the past few weeks, months, years, whatever, that would likely answer any question that I have about it. And so the asynchronous communication also means that we essentially have like quote unquote documentation in all different kinds of forms that allow people at any given time to get information that they may not have had otherwise. Yeah, and the last thing I'll say on that point is that it sort of goes back to the kind ambition piece, is that I've never had a situation where I've asked for technical help from someone on the team and felt like they thought I was stupid. There have definitely been situations where my teammates have said, listen, I don't have time right now. You know, you can figure it out, or we can do this next week. But everyone has been so generous with their knowledge that I think that's something that I tell new people at Hugging Face also, or even new contributors to our community, is it can sometimes be scary to ask the question. But it's really important to ask the question. And no one's gonna think you're stupid for having asked it. But you sort of have to do that one, two, or three times in order to get comfortable with it.
You've just reminded me about what was your hugging agent called? Duck?
Oh, that's a good question. What did I call it?
You called
it the rubber duck buddy.
Yeah, the rubber duck buddy. So on that, because generally my questions are like, if you could have invented anything, what would you invent? But I'm sandwiching the two together. I'll sandwich that together with the rubber duck. Have you been experimenting a lot with creating your own things using, because I assume that you get into different functionalities like within Hugging Face, and on that post that you did, you were like, Hugging Face is different things to different people. So like, what is it to you?
That's also a really thoughtful question. The short answer is yes. I've been trying to for some time now, working on two separate things that are sort of related. But one is thinking about pay equity. And so thinking about our team here at Hugging Face, and also, you know, tools that people can use in other organizations, particularly where there are complicated pay structures, mm-hmm. right? And so we are so lucky in that we have the ability to hire globally. And so we are currently almost 200 people, and we cover 30 countries. And so it can be really difficult to know whether or not you're paying equitably when there are mm-hmm. so many variables, including countries where people are. And so, I'm essentially have access to really wonderful data sets and different models at Hugging Face that I've been playing with for, you know, the past, I want to say 6 or 8 months. As someone who is not an engineer, it takes a while. I think for someone who is an engineer, it takes a while, but for someone who is not, it takes 10 times as long. But there really are an amazing treasure trove of tools and people who are willing to support you in the Hugging Face community. And then the last piece, or the another assistant that I made recently, a different assistant that I made recently that I think has a more immediate and probably wide-ranging applicability is just a really quick tool using our Hugging Chat where it thinks about inclusivity. And so if you're writing a social media post, or if you're going to post a job description, you can essentially paste it into this model. And in theory, if it works well, it will tell you whether or not your post is inclusive, and if not, give you sort of suggestions for how you can improve it a little bit and do some of that editing for you. That way we're not having job descriptions that are fully male coded or only thinking about folks who have PhDs and those sorts of different things. So it's been a lot of fun seeing some cutting edge tools and thinking about ways that I can play with them in topics that are important to me, which is pretty cool.
That's the whole aim of the game, I think, for scaling adoption for everyone, not just for non-technical people, because I see so much of it. It's like, this is amazing. It's like, yes, but how can I use it?
Right.
What can it do? I generally ask, like, who would you interview in the open source space or the AI space? It can be anyone. They can be dead.
Who would I interview? I'm trying to think about people I don't work with, because that's cheating. I'm just so inspired by some of the people that I work with, which is great. But I think if I could interview someone in the AI space, I would be interested in interviewing Timnit Gebru, who is the part that is less interesting is that she used to work at Google and lost her job several years ago in sort of a whistleblowing moment that you may or may not know about, but is working very hard now in terms of ethical AI and making it a safe space. And I think has a really direct approach to some really hard questions. And I would love to ask, I think, probably more people-focused questions, meaning sort of circling back to how we started this, is not how are you so confident in your platform, but how did you grow your confidence? How do you feel able to stand up against some of the biggest players in the space and speak for what is actually important and not back down, which I think are really important attributes. And I really look up to her and for the work that she's done, I think, for a lot of those reasons.
Thank you. My other thing is, and I feel like I'm going to relate it in such like a leapfrog way. I'm gonna be like, yes, totally related. But where do you experience, I feel like you would, the feeling of FOMO, like you have to keep up constantly with all of the AI news and everything like that? And it's like, well, where are you getting your information? Like, Emily wakes up in the morning, what are you looking at? Like, where do you go?
We talk about that a lot at Hugging Face, and partially because even without the whole world of AI and without AI being so hot right now and there being conversations everywhere, as I sort of mentioned earlier, we have 100 projects happening at Hugging Face at any given time. And so it's even, I was going to say difficult, but I would say impossible to keep track of everything that's happening even within the company. And so we have an incredibly active instance of Slack with, I don't even know for sure, probably 2,000 channels or something that are all active. And we tell folks to really limit what channels they join and how many conversations to be a part of, because it can be really exhausting. It's sort of a double-edged sword, right? You want to know everything that's going on, and yet you could spend your whole day just reading about what's happening in the world of AI and not actually be able to do anything else because there's so much new stuff happening all the time. And so I think that folks have to be really selective about the pieces of AI that they're learning about, or the, you know, open source corners of the world that they're engaging with, because there's just so much opportunity. That being said, I do have the privilege of learning a lot from my colleagues. The way that Hugging Face is set up is that we actually also don't have a marketing team. We essentially ask that all of our employees be their own marketers and share on Twitter or on the Hub or on LinkedIn what they're working on, what's been happening in the world. And that means that just by following all of my colleagues, I get a really good sort of general sense of what's happening in the world of AI. And so I guess if folks are asking sort of the similar question of how do you keep up, I'd say pick your favorite open source contributors and maybe limit it to 10, 20 and follow on Twitter or follow on GitHub or follow on the Hugging Face Hub. We actually have social posts now, so that's probably a good place for folks to start also.
And then the Discord. Yeah, it's very fast.
Which is also super active, which is awesome. I think we're probably 60,000 people in that Discord now. So there's essentially pick your favorite social platform and you can learn about what's happening in the world of AI. Just don't pick too many.
Yeah, I think that does come back to what you said about having conviction. And it's almost like having that strong conviction in your own beliefs and the idea that like, no, I'm doing this. Like, I'm not worried about what other people think. If they think I'm behind, like, oh, you're falling behind, bro. It's like, no, I'm not, bro. I don't care. So it's like something about confidence, because I see a lot of, I'm saying younger people, like I'm in my 30s, but like I see a lot of younger people that feel like they have to be on Reddit constantly. And it's like, I get those feelings as well. But you're back in California now. Do you travel a lot? Where do people keep up with you? LinkedIn, Twitter?
Yeah, LinkedIn is probably the best. I do try to travel fairly frequently because I like to go visit our offices and I like to go visit our Hugging people. But yeah, I keep my LinkedIn pretty up to date about what's happening at Hugging Face and what I'm up to next.
Cool. Do you have any events to be aware of, or is that?
Good question. A couple that are in Sacramento, so those might be a little too specific.
I've never been to America, so I don't know. That's quite small, right? Is that like a specific place within California?
It is, yes. So it's the capital of California, but not, I'm the only Hugging Face person here.
Wow.
But I'm fairly close to San Francisco, where we have events that happen fairly frequently. I'd say nothing for me to plug until July and when I'm back in Europe.
Nice. Okay. I'm going to end the call here, end the recording here. Thank you so much for speaking to me this morning, this evening, whenever.
Yeah.
I'm going to just stop recording. Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it was a pleasure chatting with you, and thanks for doing all this work.
That wraps up this week's episode of Unsupervised Learning. I'm your host, Renee, and I've had a great time chatting with you. As always, links to everything we discussed will be in the show notes. Make sure you reach out to our guests. For questions or feedback, reach out to pod@unsupervisedlearning.co. Until then, leave a like, follow, or rating on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or YouTube. And until next week, stay curious.